Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. I am Jason Snell, your co-host, and across the internet from me, your host, Chief TV Critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Jason.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm watching kind of a lot of TV.
Funny. You? No.
As fall is upon us.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there is so much. I realized as we got started that I haven't been calling out the premieres, although most of the network premieres are of new shows are just starting to roll out. So we really haven't missed. I feel like this weekend is the big onslaught. This is when it really starts.
Yes, this is the big push of new shows. I can remember a time, as can you, when we would be like, okay, here's the new stuff, and let's not forget all the returning things. We just live in a world where talking about returning shows, like, you're on your own, babe. Go get that. Good luck with that.
Yeah, it's I've got the calendar in front of me. Now, so many shows coming so fast, so furiously, that a story posted today as we're recording this on The Hollywood Reporter, that's you and Dan Feinberg, and it's like, we're just going to review 10 shows in one paragraph. Goodbye. And so that's one way to do it, right, is to just get on the record without necessarily having a an 800-word deep dive review of some of these shows. So you want to talk about the ones that you've like gone on the record about now that are coming up?
Yeah, it's And I prefer it this way.
Bite-sized.
Especially good. Because, you know, originally they said, let's do 100 words on these shows. And as I read through, I was like, oh, they even cut the 100 words that I wrote for some of these. But,
wow. Yeah, well, it's like the lightning round. It's review lightning round. So
it's review lightning round.
The Brave mm-hmm. on NBC premieres Monday.
Yeah, it is, as I said, heavy-handed and obvious. And just as an aside, I showed that as punishment to my newly started semester for my TV class that I teach at the California College of the Arts.
What?
Yes.
Oh, what are you mm-hmm. doing?
Exactly. And it was great because I just kept pausing at everything, and then I would do it like a heavy and like, they were picking up on it. We had to shift into the realm of like analytical thinking, and oh my god, we learned a lot about exposition, let's put it that way.
Ah, that's nice. Mentioned in your review, you know it's bad when somebody says, I don't need to give you a primer on the politics of this one, because you know what's coming next, a primer on the politics of that one.
It's so great. And the great thing about that, they cut that out of the one that's online. But the great thing is, I quoted what she said, and to me, the hilarity was how long it went on. You know, her saying, I don't need to tell you, and then telling you, but like in super detailed depth. That I was
this is the a lot of people refer to this as the as you know Bob, right?
Yes.
Which is, I'm one character is telling another character something they already know, mm-hmm. because the audience needs to hear about it. So
right.
You know, as you are aware, Bob, the nuclear controls are there's a button and there's two keys and it's like, yes, this is my job, I do know that. Thank you for saying it. But terrorism, U.S. versus the terrorists. Anne Hache is in charge of, or no, she's like the deputy director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. But it's one of these shows. It's a kind of like terrorism procedural-ish kind of.
Yeah, it feels like they'll be going into hot spots in the Muslim countries and extracting captured Americans week to week, it sounds like.
All right. Well, heavy-handed and obvious is the review.
Yes, and I would say no one needs to keep watching that. So there
lightning
you go.
Strikes. We go to Ghosted on Fox October 1st.
I wanted to, if there's a chance to do like a half-hearted endorsement of a show, I would do Ghosted because Adam Scott and Craig Robinson, who are the stars of this, are two guys that are funny.
They're great,
proven,
right?
They're yeah. great. They're proven, and they've proven they can be funny in different shows. As you and I have talked about many times, sitcoms often take two or three, four, five, sometimes six episodes before they get where they need to be. I don't know if people will wait that long in this current environment. But the Ghosted pilot is not funny. It's not painful. Like, oh, God, that's bad. Or like, oh, terrible. It's just like, okay, so you guys are kind of like Scully and Mulder in a comedy, and the government is going to use you to try to track down unexplained phenomenon, and you're two goofballs. Okay, I get that. Now just make it funny.
Yeah, so it's like X-Files, Ghostbusters, kind of. It's supposed to be a funny paranormal thing. It's like that's produced some funny material in the past and some good material. These guys are good. I did realize these are both alumni of Mike Schur sitcoms, and I realize he's not involved with this one. I'm like, oh, that's too bad. Maybe go back to Mike Schur. Maybe see what he's working on next.
Yeah, I think the pilot it needed to be. That's what I worry about. The pilot needed to be funnier because the tone is definitely all over the place. But the jokes didn't work, and that to me was more of a red flag.
All right. But it could be. It's like pieces could are there, be. And the guys who star in it are great, right? So and pilots aren't always representative, right? The other episodes could be better. They could figure it out. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's we're putting an incomplete on that, like a little red flag. Maybe, but maybe not. All right. Lightning strike. That was my sound effect for this. The Gifted on Fox, October 2nd.
Yep. Slam dunk. I would tell people to get ready for that one.
Dang.
If you're a Marvel fan, if you like the X-Men properties, it's done really well. It's...
What is it that the mutant stuff brings out the best in TV adaptations? Because, we had Legion, and here comes The Gifted. That is something. I was like, another X-Men show? Do we need another one? It's like, all right, that's good. That's good to hear.
It kind of works because, these are not the main X-Men. These are not like the all-star X-Men. These are like a bunch of we didn't even know these kind of people with these abilities existed, built into a family drama where Stephen Moyer, who kind of prosecutes mutant crimes, finds out in one day that both of his son and his daughter are both mutants. And he knows what that means, so he takes them on the run. So you're on the run. It's probably going to be a series where they're on the run. They're running also with the X-Men Underground, which is interesting. And you find a lot of interesting... people with various powers there, including some people who later had big roles in X-Files, and you can see, that's so and so, and then they can grow. I just think if you like the property, you'll love this, and it's nothing wrong with it. That's a very strong pilot.
That's encouraging. Mm-hmm. All right, we move on to The Mayor on ABC on Tuesday, the 3rd of October.
Yeah, I can't see myself watching The Mayor, but I will say this. I think it's a pretty well-produced pilot. I think it's on brand for ABC, and the star of it. So the premise is like it's fictional Northern California city. There's a really good kid who's a rapper, and he lives with a single mom, Yvette Nicole Brown, who's amazing.
Right. From Community, she's great.
Right. And he runs for mayor of this little town just to get attention for his rap career, which he's got no traction on. And then he wins. Like there's no spoiler there. And the star is this guy named Brandon Michael Hall, who is like, he's probably, I would put him as one of the front runners for breakout performers, fresh faces in the fall. He's really the whole show. He's the camera loves him. He's funny. He's endearing. You can laugh with him, and then you can sort of like understand when he makes a mistake because he's a kid as a mayor. And I think there's potential there. It's not something that I would probably watch repeatedly because it's just not my kind of thing. But it's strong. He's really good.
All right, that's good. And Lea Michele from Glee is in that too. Yeah. So that's an interesting cast. All right. A sitcom to watch about. And then is there one more? 10 Days in the Valley on ABC.
Oh, brutal.
Whoa, brutal. What are you doing? This is Kira Sedgwick. She's a TV writer because that's what the world needs to see is a drama about a television writer.
Oh, man. Another thing that they cut out of there, which is I laugh, is like they always tell you, do 100 words. No, we're going to cut that to 60. The thing that I put in there immediately was exactly what you said. It's like people who work in Hollywood don't understand that no one cares. The rest of the world does not care about how hard your job is, especially if you portray it in a way that everybody else would be like, wait, so you're saying this part's hard? This is a woman. Kira Sedgwick plays a woman who she writes for a cop show. She's done a documentary, you know, whatever, but she's done a documentary, but now she's making a network series. And, she has a nanny 7 days a week, people. Her daughter also is like, did anybody have kids in this show? Because her eight-year-old daughter goes missing, because she went into the back, not the daughter, but Kira Sedgwick went into the back and has this lovely modernist kind of woodsy cabin porn / little writing office 10 feet in the backyard, which is great. Everybody needs one of those, if you can afford it. Mm. And, she took an Ambien before she went out there. Then she drank some wine when she was out there, and then she ordered some Coke up, on this little hot dude with a, 10 speed who delivered it. And then rewrote these crappy scenes, from like, you know, a 6 hour period, and kept her kid, who's got an 8 year old. It's only 10 feet away. I get that part. But the 8 year old, she leaves a baby monitor next to the 8 year old. But like, she does it like, you know, like, of course the kid always has a baby monitor. I'm like, the kid is 8 years old. You don't need a baby monitor like at that age. So that was pretty weird. But it's also, this is also based on the life of the woman who wrote the series.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I was thinking like, are you trying to like, am I supposed to have sympathy for Kira Sedgwick? Because I don't at all. And she's kind of a jerk. And she does a lot of drama stuff where like, people are like, what? Why are the cops here? Like, why are they cordoning off your house? I don't want to talk about it. Let's go to work. Okay. Yeah, that's not exactly what you do when your daughter is missing. So it's just really bad. And the husband is over the top bad. And I think my last remark on the whole thing was like, I hope whoever took the kid takes her to a better family.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what does it say about us that the most fun one to talk about is the one that's no good?
Yeah, I know, right?
Accentuate the positive. We should also mention some other premieres coming up. Mm-hmm. Star Trek Discovery premieres on Sunday on CBS, yeah. And then the second episode will be also premiering on CBS All Access the same night. I think they're running 7 weeks. The first half of the season is mm-hmm. the next 7 or 8 weeks, something like that. Young Sheldon premieres Monday. Get ready, everybody. It's everybody's favorite. But it's a single camera. It's not going to be, and Dan actually reviewed that in 100-word form too.
Yes, exactly. I think none of that. If that show is going to work, I don't think you have to worry about that. Whether it's any good is the decision. Yeah.
Yeah, it's his short review is that when the kid is on his own, it's not funny. When he's with his mom, it's funnier. And again, nothing we say or do will have any impact on whether Young Sheldon goes or not, as it sits right behind Big Bang Theory on CBS's Monday Night Comedy lineup.
Mm-hmm. Critic proof, no doubt about it.
Also, a bunch of other CBS premieres, Me, Myself, and I at 9:30, which is a comedy. We get The Brave, as you reviewed, on NBC at 10, and The Good Doctor on ABC at 10. And then Law and Order True Crime with the Menendez brothers is they're the hosts of it. No, they're the ones who killed their parents.
Right, exactly.
That's on Tuesday night. That's another series premiere. SEAL Team, the series, premieres on CBS on Wednesday night. And Marvel's Inhumans premieres on Friday night, the 29th, which so we could talk about that next week, but boy, that sounds really bad. So anyway,
that has probably the lowest, I mean, that'll probably end up with one of the most, you know, torn apart new series. People hate it. Wisdom of the Crowd is on Sunday, October 1st. Dan hated that one too. So yeah, I mean, SEAL Team is basically The Brave if you want to put all your jingoistic dramas into one basket. There's that. The only one that I didn't review that Dan reviewed that I thought, I wonder if this is going to work is the Law and Order True Crime series, the Menendez brothers. I wonder if that one is actually based on the fact that, you know, the stuff is working on FX. I wonder if they can kind of tweak Law and Order to be a little more like that and have it work, because you got Edie Falco in the lead, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know. I think it's a great idea. I think if you're looking at the Law and Order franchise and you realize how well the American Crime Story, you know, that to do a true rip from the headlines true crime thing under the Law and Order banner. Why not? Why not try that? That
could
Could be good. And if this works, then they can go to Betty Broderick next. Look it up, people. Betty Broderick. It's a great story. Great story. San Diego lady who I think shot her husband to death. Anyway,
Okay, another upbeat example of TV talk machine.
Yeah, that's. I'm just saying she's got a Wikipedia page. You can look up the story of Betty Broderick. She'd make a great. They did do a made for TV movie where Meredith Baxter played her, but that would be a great Law and Order true crime.
God, Betty Broderick. Yeah.
Anyway, she's like her ex. I think it was her ex husband and his new wife that she shot. Yeah, it was a heck of a story. Anyway, just passing some true crime recommendations for those who like that sort of thing. Hey, let's not talk about that anymore. Let's talk about nonfiction TV that we must watch, ranked in order of power.
I love it. I'm glad that it finally got out. I would say that before we go through this, my idea was to actually circle back and do unscripted summer escapist fare. Well, for a lot of people, summer's over. Not for California, but for a lot of people. And the more I looked at it, it's like there's a lot of I really thought like maybe I should differentiate unscripted and reality and nonfiction. And I just found that the ones that were going to be lighter in fare were less interesting than the ones that I think were a little meatier. So I really just honed in on nonfiction because, you know, then you can have documentaries, which are clearly scripted, and you can just do meatier fare. And I think I ended up with it's a stretch, as I said in there at the beginning of this piece. And as you know, we talk about scripted all the time. And you know, the great secret is that most critics don't watch hardly any unscripted, but right. I picked 10, I think, that were really solid.
Yeah, so it was fun to see you get a little bit outside of your element too for some of these things too, and things that you've noted and that you think it's interesting. Planet Earth 2, we've talked about Planet Earth 2 here. The snakes.
Oh my God! Yeah, everything, right? I mean, that's the number one pick. That's number one on the list.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's I looked back at that and as I was ranking them and I also started watching a lot of documentaries. As I note in the introduction, you could make 10 or 15 or 20 just documentaries on this list. And there were a number that I couldn't get to in time. Just, you know, it's the fall season, so you can't do that. But of these 10, I think these are a really strong list. But boy, how do you, I love a lot of shows on these 10, but how do you get a better example of like nonfiction television programming of the highest order? Planet Earth 2, for sure.
Yeah. Soundbreaking is in here.
Yes. Number 2.
Of course.
So one of my favorite music documentaries of all time.
Yep. I'm still turning people onto that. Even now.
Yep.
Ken Burns, The Vietnam War, which probably, I would imagine, prompted this list, right?
Yeah. And that it certainly prompted. Yeah, it did. And it prompted. Well, I mean, before I was thinking of it clearly, like, when I was doing the Escapist Fair, I was like, wow, you know, the Soundbreaking and Planet Earth 2 would be really like 1-2 jumping off points. Those are such great shows. And I knew the Vietnam War was looming. And this is exactly what you're talking about. How you couldn't put the Vietnam War in Escapist Summer Fair, because I can tell you it's not. But I love Ken Burns, and I had a week this week where I had some time where I had a laptop and I was doing a lot of watching. So I gobbled up a number of these episodes and Dan's already reviewed it, but the Vietnam War is amazing. It's such a good documentary, and it's maddening in its current connections to our world and repeating mistakes over and over again. But still wonderful.
I was surprised by some of the other items on your list. Like, I didn't know Anthony Bourdain you put on the list, which is I've only seen like little bits of that show, the CNN show, but it's pretty cool. Like, because you're putting an interesting guy in interesting places, talking about the culture and the food. It leads to some really good TV, I think.
Yeah, and weirdly enough, for this one, I think, and you calling this a surprise, I'm sure it is a surprise to most people who follow the stuff. But I actually have watched a lot of. You know, No Reservations, Parts Unknown. He's another iteration that he had once. And so that's why I was like, and Parts Unknown's been on forever now. But like, I'm not a big foodie. I mean, I love eating the food, as we'll talk about later at the end of this list, but less in prepping it. But like, it was such a can't miss proposition on shows with him, because he's so interesting. And he's like a guy where you don't expect to like him. I'm sure he might alienate some people, but that is a dude where I would love to have dinner with him, and like, well, either just by himself or in a, you know, that cliche of having dinner with 10 people, living or dead. He's proved through the years that he's awesome at dinner, because he can cook it. He can find it in any city in the world, finds you a great place to go. But beyond that part of it, Anthony Bourdain is really interesting about, has very interesting thoughts about life. He's very philosophical. He's very much of the people. And I think he can hang with presidents and he can hang with peasants. And it's such a simple show. Take Anthony Bourdain, make him travel and make him eat. Perfect.
Yeah. I want to mention another one that might surprise some people, but actually didn't surprise me, because of I have friends who watch and love RuPaul's Drag Race, mm-hmm. and they will say it is among the best reality competition shows running, and it has been for a long time, and people don't pay attention to it because it's been around for a while, and mm-hmm. Or they don't like the genre. But I've heard people really defend it as one of the best of these kinds of shows, and it just doesn't get its thumbs up as often as it should. So I thought it was great that you listed that.
Yeah, and that was a big one, because you know, in the LGBTQ community, that is like such a beacon of a show. And you know, she's really super interesting person, whether it's drag or not. And RuPaul is just yeah, because there was a long time ago, RuPaul had a scene at was the Emmys or something, and he was hanging out with Milton Berle and said something really rude, and I was like, ugh, this whatever. But if you watch the show at all, you know, it was clearly the Emmys thing or whatever it was an outlier years and years ago. And it's really important to a lot of people. And it's actually just a really well done show and really fun, you know, really fun to watch.
Yeah, I'll mention too, because you were struggling with it there. I actually looked it up. And this is one of those cases where, because RuPaul will sometimes present in drag as, you know, mm-hmm. obviously as female, and will sometimes present as male. And mm-hmm. when asked about his pronouns or her pronouns, said, either one is fine. I don't care. So just so we're clear, I'm not trying to misgender RuPaul. RuPaul is all over the place and fine with it. So that's, which I think is great. Yeah. I recommend to people who like podcasts or like podcasts and like reality TV that they should check out The Villain Edit, which is a podcast on the Incomparable Network by my friend Monty and his girlfriend Rias. And they talk about the reality TV shows they watch. And so if you want more reality stuff, check out The Villain Edit on the
Incomparable. Oh, that's perfect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They got it covered. They watch a lot of it. And I don't watch almost any of it, but they do. And then they talk about it. So it's pretty cool. And, you know, I was also surprised that Carpool Karaoke made it in from Apple Music, of all things. Somewhere, somebody at Apple's like, yes, yes.
I loved it. You know, I just, to me, it's, you know, I've seen a bunch of those. You can't miss on that, right? I mean, I love all the skits that he's in. And then when they made it into a show, I mean, you could quibble about some of the editing on it, just like you could with the, you know, Battle of the Apps or whatever, Planet of the Apps, yeah. Their first one, which is just not edited well for a TV series. I think they're going to do better unscripted. But I don't understand how Carpool Karaoke cannot be fun. I mean, it's just great people. I like watching even artists that I would never really listen to so much, or I wouldn't buy their stuff. It's entertaining. It's fun.
Right. Want to do some letters?
Sure. Let's do that.
We skipped them last time because we had to go. It was we were tight and bright last time, but I think we got a little time to do some letters. I got some letters built up here. So this is a good one. This is from our friend Brandon from the 301. We've heard about him before. Sometimes he is Brando, but he's actually Brandon. He says, based on a conversation on the Incomparable member Slack. If you become an Incomparable member, you can join our little Slack chat and chat with other listeners of all the Incomparable podcasts. There is a TVTM channel in there. People are interested in going in there and leaving questions. I do check it out. He says, I was reminded of my reaction to commercial breaks these days. Basically, they are starting to frustrate me to the point of getting me angry. I didn't used to be like that. Growing up, I loved commercials. My grandpa would mute commercials, which is all he could do given that the TiVo wasn't a thing when he was around. And that bugged me when I was a kid. Now, I sympathize since I kind of despise commercials. Even the Super Bowl commercials have got me angry. They got me madder this year because those breaks are so long. Are network TV people talking about this? Because more and more of us are getting used to life without commercials, which can't be good for businesses that have an ad-based business model. Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah. They're definitely talking about it. They've been talking about it for like a decade plus now. But yeah, I think that, look, there's two ways you can make money. You can make money by selling ads, or you can make money by selling subscriptions. And, you know, if you're not Netflix or Hulu, which hilariously is the one that was able to do both for a long time, which I thought, like, this is not really how it works. But, you know, now I get Hulu without the ads. But
yeah,
like, if, unless you're HBO or Netflix or what, a premium service that's a subscription-based service, you're going to have ads to survive. And it does annoy people. And that's why I think that the upcoming version of FX and AMC and their apps, and once they start opening up their vaults to streaming their stuff without any kind of commercials, I think that's going to be a hit among certain people. And certainly, like, Brandon's going to love that. So
yeah, it's only a matter of time before, you know, we're going to be in an all streaming world, or almost all streaming, and your choice is going to be to watch ads or pay, or, you know, pay and watch ads, or pay more and don't watch ads. That's what CBS All Access is, right? And Hulu is like that. But that, you know, the DVR has saved us from that, but that's eventually, all this stuff is not going to be on your DVR anymore. It's going to be streaming, and they're going to get you one way or another, and they know it. I think that's why you mentioned it, you know, why these cable channels are offering ad-free subscription services now, is that that's another way for them to make money in the post-commercial era. Because I do think the DVR has made us all much less into commercials. It's like we banished them and don't want to see them again.
Right. It's certainly a really interesting issue from an advertising perspective. If you were somebody at like Adweek and covering that, and Jason Lynch has done a really good job on that. If you get Adweek, but the idea that for the longest time, I mean, I thought that I think we've talked about this. I want to say way back, maybe even a couple iterations ago of TV Talk Machine, but. Yeah, I mean, that should have been the killer, you know, the DVR should have been the killer app, basically, for commercials. But the reason that it was saved was either some brilliant spinning on the behalf of Nielsen's or others. But, you know, we just talked a couple of weeks ago, for example, the people, even if they have TiVos, they end up watching the commercials. So there's that unexpectedly weird part of it. But beyond that, you know, there's a company that was based in Berkeley that was bought by Nielsen, and their scientists had said that even if you do boop 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 three times on TiVo and fast forward it, you're mentally still picking up 75% of the commercial. And they were able to sell that idea to advertisers, and they paid a little bit less on certain things, but when it's time shifted. So, you know, it's all there. It's a big issue. It's a lot of economic. It's much more of an economic and advertising issue than it is a content issue, so I don't do too much of it. But, yeah, eventually, you could probably say that starting with HBO and then certainly much more modernized Netflix, we've conditioned people that there shouldn't be commercials. And the more people who start watching Netflix, the more people who are not going to want to watch anything that has ads.
Yep. Ruined it for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm going to Columbo myself here and say, we didn't even mention that the Emmys happened, right? I guess we should do that. I left it and started reading. I didn't even put it in because it's like, it was like a week ago now, but I guess we should say the Emmys happened.
That's funny that you mentioned that, because I was going to Columbo you later for, since you didn't do the whole list of the 10 on the power rankings. I was going to just wait and only Columbo you on, like, at the end of the podcast saying, I can't believe you didn't ask me about the Great British Bake Off / baking show, which, you know, is like something up my wheelhouse, but I watched a ton of it online. But anyway, yes, the Emmys, your Columbo version. Yes, that gigantic thing did happen.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Handmaid's Tale won, so Hulu gets the big prize there before Netflix.
Yep. You know, it's like at the point when it's announced and the winners, you can go, ugh. But, you know, I certainly did better this year. It's funny. You can adjust it from two ways. But for me, I look at, like, since I do the other thing with Scott Feinberg at THR, where he does the will win because he's a prognosticator.
Professional prognosticator, yes.
Exactly. And I do the should win because I'm only about the content. There are some Emmy years when my should wins win. And then basically that's when the next day's press coverage from critics is like, wow, the Emmy people woke up and they've modernized or they've done better. This year, all my will win picks won most of them. And you could say, oh, well, that means like the people who should have won from a critic, that must not be the thing. But it's not true, though, because a lot of stuff some of the stuff like Big Little Lies, you knew that was going to win. There was no chance it was not going to win a lot of those awards. But a lot of ones that people who won, they were great. And I think that's a testament to how good television is in the Platinum Age. People who won, who I wouldn't have picked, or I like somebody better, it doesn't mean that I think, I don't know if I can remember if there was a huge travesty or not. I don't remember being outraged by that at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it seemed reasonable. So unless you've got like particular, oh, I want to talk about this. Like the Emmys happened. People can go see.
Yeah, I was more outraged about Sean Spicer than I was anything else. So I was a big misstep on Colbert's part and part of the show. So
let me know when you want to break in with your British baking.
No, I everybody talks about it. I knew I had to have it in this list because it's everybody's favorite cooking show, pretty much.
But they ruined it. They took it to ITV and the people left. Like,
well, Channel 4.
Some of the main people. Channel 4, whatever. I don't know about BBC. It's all BBC. Okay. They went to BBC 4, ITV 4. I don't know what it is. But they went to commercial broadcast and people quit and it was a big to-do and I've never seen the show, so...
Yeah, that is fun. You know, the weird thing is, I actually did like it, and there's a lot on. There's a lot you can watch that's already on PBS. There's a lot you can find online, and I watched a lot of it, and I laughed as I did it because I was like, I was just in that mood where I was. It's kind of a bummer week, so I was like, okay, show me some crazy cooking, and I always loved when they said, and now the challenge is going to be this kind of cake, and I was like, I never even heard of that cake. And people were like, oh, like the contestants are like, no, not that one. And I was like, I don't even know. I eat cake and I have no idea what you're talking about. So from that perspective, it was fun and funny. Yes, they did lose three people. One of the guy is still involved in it. But it was fun. I enjoyed it. I get why people do it. I did say at the end, though, that if something was going to fall off this list, it was probably going to be this one because I can't watch too many baking shows. But I enjoyed it for what it was. And for people who are big fans of it, I get it. I understand why you watch.
Also, Bob Ross, The Joy of Painting, all-time Hall of Famer.
True. He doesn't fit the... It has to be on the air in a year, but yes, you're right.
No, he's just he's in the Hall of Fame category. He's not in the current. It's the all-time Hall of Fame. Happy Little Trees. I used to watch that when I was a kid, and I was just like... It's just entrancing. Anyway, yeah. That's...
You know what? Since you did this, I know we have... Do we have more letters?
There are many more letters, but that's... but that's fine.
No. I thought, okay, all right, you know what? Okay, forget it. Let's roll with it. I need you to I just want to tell you because I'm so bummed that they cut it. With that line on The Brave, when Anne Heche says, there's so much exposition and so clunky, so many anvils. She says, this is what she says. This is the actual line from the show. She says, I don't need to give you a primer on the politics of this one. And then in my things, I'm like, and yet she does. This is what she follows it with. So she keeps going. You will be going into a non-permissible environment in a state of civil war and into a city where the population will shoot you on sight if they figure out who you are. There will be no support on this one. No cavalry. And the special ops leader says, right, we are the cavalry. Oh, brutal.
You know what I say to that? Isolate torso.
Isolate torso. Oh my god.
Sometimes you just gotta laugh. Okay, this is from Laura in the 505, although she's a 510 native. She's just
in 505.
New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new Mexico. Ooh. she says, have you ever stopped watching a good show because you didn't like the personality or values of the main character? Is it bad writing or directing? For example, I don't think I can watch the third season of Rectify because the main character, Daniel Holden, has become annoying, and I'm halfway through Mr. Mercedes, but I'm not enjoying a curmudgeon as the lead. Walter White and Raymond Reddington are the exceptions. Also, she says, I usually listen to the podcast while soaking in the tub on Saturday. So hello, Laura's Tub. This is not your rubber ducky talking.
That is, if this was the original version of the TH,
this would be the growl would happen here. I thought, had the same thought. Yep, that's it. That's right. But we're elevated now. We don't do that stuff anymore.
We don't do that. We don't do the flirting.
No, it's not. It's not permitted. It makes everybody uncomfortable. It's not appropriate. But I had an example of an annoying character that drove me away from a show.
Okay,
which is because, of course, we don't prepare. So I just sprung this on you just now. But I will say, so Ed, the TV show with what's his name?
Tom
Cavanaugh. Mm-hmm. Which I liked, and it was a bunch of David Letterman producers did it, and it was bowling alley lawyer, and it was quirky, and Michael Ian Black was in it, and what's her name? Who's the
Justin
mom?
Long.
Yeah, Justin Long was in it. Yeah, that's where we first met Justin Long. TV's Justin Long, and from Modern Family.
Amber Tamblyn, right?
No, the wife from Modern Family.
Oh, yeah, Julie, yeah.
Yeah, so good cast, all that.
Julie Bowen,
there we go, thank you. Wow, you're coming up with names today. Uh-huh. It's a real Freaky Friday. anyway, that show, they decided, because they were playing the moonlighting game of will they or won't they, can we get these two characters together? Can Ed and his old high school flame, who is Julie Bowen, can they get back together? And at some point, they're like, we must create more drama in this show. And they brought in, like, the principal of the high school where Justin Long's character went to school.
Oh, right.
And
yes.
he was vying for her affection. And it was John Slattery, who everybody knows from Mad Men now.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And he was what we called him Principal Jackass. And uh-huh. he was first off opposed to our hero, Ed, the mm-hmm. bowling alley lawyer. And yeah. And he was a jerk to Warren Cheswick, played by Justin Long, who was our plucky, mm-hmm. nerdy kid. And he was just kind of a jerk to everybody, but was also put opposed to Ed as the romantic vying for the affections of Carol. Julie Bowen, and I gave up on the show because I was like, I can't watch this guy. I can't watch that character because he was such a jerk. And I know that they're like, oh no, but it's drama. We got to put him in opposition. I was like, no, I just can't. He's so bad. I can't. And I turned off the show. And that was the end of Ed for me. It was that part, which is I felt bad when I watched Mad Men. And I was like, oh hey, it's Principal Jackass, John Slattery. Like, wow. Sorry that I think of you as the guy who ruined Ed for me, but that was pretty much it. And it wasn't his performance. He was doing what they were telling him to do, which was be a jerk. But yeah, it was just like a sour. So I am a believer that one sour note can ruin an entire show for you, whether it's the lead character or just a supporting character. It can happen.
Yeah, I don't give up on shows because of their morals. That she mentioned that, I think. I don't do that. Like, I don't care. They could be whatever. I'm looking for something that I could like in them. And I like jerks, and you can like a lot of bad people. I mean,
You're the Worst is a great example where I love that show dearly, and those mm-hmm. people are terrible. Right.
Well, for the longest time, people were like, oh my God, Don Draper. I'm like, he's by far my favorite person in the show. Like, I love Don Draper. So it's like, there's, obviously Tony Soprano, people were like, oh, he's okay. I'm like, oh, so Tony Soprano's okay, but Don Draper's not, right? I mean, it's like, okay, so you'd rather have Tony beat up people and kill them than like be drinking and sleep on, sleep with other women. So it's like it's a weird thing. So morally, I don't do that, but you're right. If somebody's annoying, it's a real struggle, especially if they're going to be around for a long time. Like, for example, I obviously didn't bail, but I really struggled with King Joffrey in Game of Thrones because I thought he's too far over the top. He's too unlikable. This is almost, and it's just like, what's his name? The next terrible despot the Battle of the Bastards, the other bastard, not
Ramsay Snow.
Ramsay Bolton.
Right. He was kind of, right. So there's questions like, when is the villain fun to watch, and when is they are they just boring or awful and repellent?
Well, if you calculate it so it goes too far, like I would say that Ramsay was so. Ramsay Bolton was so evil and like, but he was a sociopath, and so some elements of his sociopathic tendencies were interesting. Joffrey was just a little prick,
yeah,
and I wanted to kill him at every turn.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And I just thought that character that was poorly written. I thought there's no gray area.
I like how you put that because it's like Joffrey, you just want to kill them to get them out of the way. Whereas with Ramsay Bolton, you wanted to somebody in the narrative to make him die horribly to watch that happen to get his comeuppance. And I feel like there's that because I feel the same way. And I think that is a legitimate distinction there is with where it's like, oh no, I want to see this guy get what's coming to him versus look, you're just boring. Just go away. Like, yeah, I just don't even want you around anymore. So.
Yeah, and I didn't like that. You know what? I was happy when, you know, it did eventually happen. But my favorite part of the whole Joffrey thing was finding out that the guy in real life is actually very funny and like a goofball. And then he videotapes himself on Instagram and is nice to fans and shows up and things. He's just like totally not the Joffrey, you know. He's just a happy-go-lucky kid. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah. Also, Hodor is a DJ. Anyway.
Yes, Hodor.
What a weird world we live. Okay, so we'll move on. This one is from Yash, who didn't leave his name, but he says, I'm a college student living on a budget. I'm obsessed with TV. I read a story about online options to watch the Emmys, which introduced me to YouTube TV for $35 a month. I can record this and all that. It sounds a little like an ad. I don't know if this is like he's been paid by YouTube TV here, but he says, if I get this and HBO Now and Netflix that I already have, that's like $58 a month. Is that cheaper overall than a traditional cable plan? Which I don't know. We're not going to do any price research here because that would require a lot of time. But this, I wanted to read this because I think this is really interesting. Like, this is that moment of realization that people have, which is like, great, I can subscribe to all of these things and get all this stuff. And then they look at the total they're paying and they're like, oh, wait a second. How much was I paying for cable now that I'm paying $60 a month for these streaming services?
Right. And I think that and I've actually done a lot of research in here. So on this particular topic, you can call your cable thing and say, I'm canceling. And then they'll slash your. I mean, if no one's done that yet, they should do that immediately.
Yes. Stop.
Finish the podcast. Call your cable provider and say,
cancel.
I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah. They will slash your bill. They do it. They have everybody on the line has permission to do that. It's just too competitive not to. But in general, I think that the point that you're getting at is like, if this guy's going with this YouTube thing and then Netflix and HBO, I guess you have to look at what you're getting. Like, are you getting a lot? And probably not. I mean, you do get a lot from Netflix, and if you have access to the HBO library, but if you want diversity and a lot of different other choices, you can definitely get a cheaper cable bill and not spend as much. If you're just going to go traditional cable, I'm not sure you can get it down into like 58 territory because you certainly wouldn't have HBO and that stuff. So you have to make those hard decisions about how many options do you want? Cause you can certainly for a little bit more than that, have a pretty big and diverse selection. I think that, you know, the idea that we've done this before and worked to get things cut down, I think $75 is right about where you can get a number of things, and then you have to get View. If you do that, you've got to do the PlayStation View and then get some skinny bundles, but you can get it to about $75.
Yeah, and if you want to really go on a diet, you gotta take it way down, and you're gonna miss a lot of stuff. But you can do it, and I feel like that's when it's a cord cutter. Like cord cutting at its best is if you have a very small diet of television, and you're only picking up a couple of things, and it's like Amazon and Netflix, and everything else you just let it go and wait for it. As we've said before, wait for that show you buy on iTunes or that show you wait until it's on Blu-ray, and everything else you just kind of focused on the two things that you're paying for. But if you want everything or lots of things, you're going to get back up in that $60, $70, $80 range. That's they want their money.
easy and even beyond that. But that's, again, that's it, I think people just need to take out a you know, a yellow notebook and make a line down the middle and say, this is what I want, absolutely want to have, and this is what I don't care. Find out what you're paying for and say, these are the shows that I want. And then you can, it's easy to add your packages up after that. And I think you'll probably find that it's probably not going to be, unless you're really diligent, it's probably not going to get what you want at an affordable rate.
All right, here's one from Kelly from the 843, which is South Carolina, formerly from the 202.
Okay.
It says, Tim and Jason, I'm a big fan since the old podcast, When is the Riches Coming Back?
Nice.
Oh, what are you doing? A lot of references to the old podcast today.
Yeah, there was.
She says, I had to write in about Tim's dismissiveness of Big Little Lies. Yes, it was about rich white women, but does that automatically disqualify it from having a story to tell? Even today, a series revolving around the lives of women is shockingly uncommon, not to mention that the show put a spotlight on the complicated issue of domestic abuse and survivors. You're certainly welcome to dislike the series, but to be so against it without even finishing it seems just odd to me.
Well, this popped up a lot during the Emmys while I was live tweeting it. So I'm glad it actually popped up here. A couple of things. And by the way, one of the producers of the Emmys gloated to both Dan and I. And I was able to respond to him and say, enjoy your gloating. I'm happy that there's joy in your life. But no, I was not quote unquote wrong about your show. It's just an opinion. But here's the thing with Big Little Lies. People are conflating the very serious issues that are in the show, particularly about domestic abuse, and then my hatred of the show. In no way have I ever connected the two. So they're conflating my dislike for it and saying, yeah, but it's got all these things. And there's this. And my thing is this. Look, yes, you can actually have a show about domestic abuse, or you could have like gay rights, it could be about racism, you could whatever hot button issue that is really important can be in there. If the show is no good, then the show is no good. And if you can't get into it in these days, like for example, Dan, who will, you know, the guy will watch anything, and sometimes he'll see it all the way through, even though, because he's got more time. And he said, look, he wrote a wrap up of Big Little Lies. He said, I didn't like it all the way through. I still don't think a lot of these things make sense, but these were some pretty great performances at the end. And whether you liked how it ended or not, or whether you thought there was red herrings, blah, blah, blah. But he basically said, I like these performances and these issues are important. My view of it as the person who reviewed it initially was, none of the stuff that happens at the beginning of the show is believable. That closes the door for me. I have kids, and you know, the kindergarten scene where the teachers have the kids out each other, and then the parents fight in the parking lot. That would A, never happen, and B, those parents fighting in the parking lot were rich white women, and they had rich white women problems. And so, to me, the dialogue was terrible. And they used this the Greek chorus concept. I'm sure people should be familiar with that. The Greek chorus concept that was used to have the people who lived in the town talk about the people who were in this unsolved crime that you find out at the last episode, this murder mystery. That was laughably bad. It wasn't just bad dialogue. It was laughably bad and poorly, poorly constructed. So to me, this was a terrible show. Like, and in the world that we live in with platinum age of television, you are not going to get me to watch more than three or four episodes of something that I find unbearable to get to the end and then say, oh, but like, these are these amazing performances and it brought up this issue of domestic abuse and blah, blah, blah. Fine. That's great. But yeah, I couldn't get to that end because the beginning part of it was terrible. People are sometimes conflating my dislike of it for like not being interested. And I totally disagree with the presumption that women are not at the front of any shows. I mean, I think that's ludicrous because if you look at television right now, like so many shows, particularly on broadcast network, are built around women. And the industry still has lots of ways to go for portraying women and giving them more roles, certainly, but the longer way to go for minorities and portraying gay people in a way that's not offensive. And minorities. There's big issues to go, but women there's so many great women on television in roles that where they're the lead. So I don't buy that at all.
All right. I think it's fair. I'm going to do some Tim interpretation here to say that one of the things you're saying is that that scene with the in the parking lot is a thing that was a turnoff for you, but it was not about the larger issues of the show, right? It was just that that scene was why, you know, why do I care about your problems? And then there are lots of other reasons you dislike the show that have to do with the fact that the dialogue didn't work for you and you just thought it was bad, which is, you know, a fair point. It's like it's not the subject matter that ultimately is the reason you thought it was bad.
Yeah, no, it's certainly not the subject matter of what quote unquote big issues that they get to. But when at the beginning, there literally is no way around anyone can talk about Big Little Lies. There is literally no way around the discussion where you can't admit or you would have to admit that they are all rich white people and they're disaffected in their rich houses in Monterey looking out at the ocean. Mm. And that is a specific demographic. When you get to their bigger problems that are universal, yeah, I get that. But at that point, I was like, especially when the writing was so bad.
On Twitter, Timicus wrote in from the 865 saying, where is the 865? This is Knoxville, Tennessee and surroundings. All right, great. I've been there. Really getting into the Orville, hoping this might start a string of science fiction comedy shows. Nerd time, I will say. Mm-hmm. I didn't like the Orville first episode, the pilot, at all. I thought it was a bad mix. We talked about it here, of a show that doesn't mm-hmm. know what it wants to be. Does it want to be sort of a rehash of Star Trek The Next Generation? Does it want to be a body, you know, Seth MacFarlane comedy? And mm-hmm. the answer is maybe yes, but also no to all, right? Like, it didn't know what it was going to be. I've seen the second episode now, and I'll say it was better. I still don't think I would say it was good, but I felt it was better. We'll see where it goes. I think that there is a good show potentially in there if they can figure out what they want to be. I could do with fewer dick jokes, but mm-hmm. it's Seth MacFarlane, so I probably can't actually get fewer dick jokes because it's Seth MacFarlane. He can't help it. But they got a bunch of Star Trek people working on it who worked on the old Star Trek shows like Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and all that. Could be good eventually. I agree. It would be nice to have a lighthearted... I'm a fan of lighthearted genre shows, right? Like, I like them to have a sense of humor and not be super serious. Some of the super serious stuff is great too. Battlestar Galactica was great. I'm hopeful for Star Trek Discovery, but having lighter stuff, that's why I liked Stargate back in the day, is that it was kind of light and fun, and adventure. And, there's room for that if they can figure out what they want to be, Timicus, but, I wouldn't endorse the Orville yet, but I haven't seen episode 3 yet. So who knows?
I would just add to that the ratings are good, and so it's in no imminent danger of being pulled away. And as a side to that, I would like to congratulate. I mean, they may have changed their ads now because now they've got they just aired the third episode. But I would like to congratulate Fox for being cognizant of the fact that every network in the history of television has always said in the first week, Fall's hit new show.
That's right.
The biggest hit on, you know, like, and everything else hasn't even come out yet. The Fall's biggest hit. It's super deceptive. And so when the ratings were good for Orville, or better than I think they expected, they didn't say that. And they didn't even say it after the second week when the ratings still held up. They said, Fall's new fan favorite. And I thought, I'm okay with that. I like that. I think that's respectful. And I appreciated that. If everybody else does that, I think that we're going to be in a better place.
I think the best case scenario for the Orville is they get their feet under them, Seth MacFarlane's clout, and maybe if ratings hold up, although they were on Sunday night, right? Now they've moved to Thursday night. But if they can keep the ratings at a plausible level, even like plausible to end up on Friday night for Fox, right? Plausible, and Seth MacFarlane's clout keeps them on the air long enough to find their feet, then they might have something, right? I think that's the best case scenario is you got to, if you look at the Star Trek shows, most of the Star Trek shows, like Star Trek The Next Generation, which is very clearly modeled on, its first two seasons were kind of not good. and then they kind of got it together. Now, they don't have that much leeway, but they've got maybe a season, you know, a full season order to get their stuff together. And if they do, then yeah, they could get it together, or they could not. And it could still be the kind of meandering, unclear hodgepodge that it has been a little bit. So we'll see. But
Yeah.
Yeah. There's smart people behind it, and it's got potential, and I would like a light fun. I mean, I like, as much as I'm looking forward to Star Trek Discovery having a modern serialized story structure, I kind of dig the fact that on the Orville, they basically said, nope, standalone episodes. Every episode has a little adventure in it, and at the end, it's over. It's like, all right, well, that's really old school, but for a network show, a broadcast show, maybe that's what people want, and maybe that's the mm-hmm. right thing to do. Maybe it's kind of refreshingly old school. I don't know. Indy Sarah, our buddy.
Yay.
With love from the 317. Yeah.
Always. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she is in Indianapolis area, of mm-hmm. course. Indy Sarah. Indy Town. She says, I'm catching up. I'm very behind. Has Tim seen the second season of Top of the Lake? I like the first season quite a bit.
Tim has not. Oh. And I find that troubling. I should probably knock that out this weekend, by the way, because it's just three nights. I think I ran it three in a row. So I will probably be able to finish that. Isn't it three in a row? I think they did. So I'll get on it. I have been secretly watching a lot of shows that popped up on my list of things that I was going to watch. So I'm shifting that around so that it can come out again. But no, unfortunately on that one, I haven't. But I will catch up on it. It is one of my, I did love the first one, bleak as it was, but I will definitely want to watch the second one as well.
Sorry, Sarah. Not yet. Not yet. this is a great letter. I like this one a lot. This is from Adam in the +61. So for overseas.
Ooh, +61.
Yeah, that's
is that Australia.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's drop bears coming in from Adam.
Here they come.
This is great. Why are TV shows so dark now? I mean the actual picture, not the storyline.
I don't know. It is a good point. I will say this. I got a Sonos bass,
Playbase.
Playbase. I love it. I was not given to me. I bought it. I love it. And when they hooked it up, I had one of the TVs where it was going to, it's a long story. Let's
it's
just
completely
say
completely incompatible. And so
if you have a Sharp Aquos, you don't get one of those, mm-mm. Get a new TV. So I got moved my son's TV in there, which is better and whatever. But he also kind of had, cause he was playing a lot of games. It kind of had that soap opera effect thing going on. I had to go in there.
You have to turn off the like motion smoothing and all of that.
Motion smoothing, which is, I had to look it up and I knew about it. And I was like, but it wasn't as obvious as it had been in the past. And I think it's because we had tinkered with a lot of the color buttons to make it do it. Mm-hmm. But I will say this. The first thing I watched was Game of Thrones, and I saw so much more stuff on Game of Thrones than I've ever, like, I was like, I sat there and I was texting people going, the person who's the who does the costumes should have like 10 Emmys. These costumes are amazing. And then I was like, at one scene, I was like, wait, what the heck? Like the stuff that was underneath, Winterfell when they're standing up where Ned used to stand and Arya would be standing up there and looking down. You could see nothing on my TV set. It was a big black blob. On this one, I was like, I see billowing sheets, and it's like a kind of cutout garage with wood stored in it. And like, and I watched like three episodes like that. And obviously, I knew that there was some kind of element of the soap opera effect going on. But just to be able to see things was very revealing. And so, yes, I don't know why that is.
You should be able to turn off the soap opera effect and still see. So the thing is, TVs can be, well, there are a couple things going on, right? One is dynamic range, which is TVs that are not these new HDR TVs are they struggle more with being able to represent black and also white, and that the size of that dynamic range. But you can calibrate your TV and you can change your TV settings. And I would think, like Adam, it's a good example because he said they were watching Handmaid's Tale, and he said if there had been no audio, I would have thought the television turned off, right? Like,
wow,
it's super
okay.
dark. So I will say this. You can change your settings on your TV and make it brighter. My TV actually has a calibrated and a calibrated dark setting. So I actually have one that I can flip to at night when we got the lights down low and it kind of darkens everything, but I can still see. But in the daytime, I have it cranked up a little bit more. But calibrate your TV, turn off all the motion smoothing. There's a site that I'll recommend to people if they want to know how to do it, because there are like calibration apps you can run, or on some Blu-rays and stuff, they've got them. Mm-hmm. You can also go to rtings.com, rtings.com/TV. And they have, for most modern TVs the last few years, you can actually find your TV brand, or you just search for rtings.com and your TV model. And they will often have like literally a shot of the settings you should put on your TV.
Wow.
And it is very helpful, at least as a starting point. And sometimes I did that recently, and it worked great, and I can see things much more clearly now. But there's no shame in turning up the brightness on your TV or the contrast in order to see more of it, because I think that's what's happening, is that TV shows are being more aggressive in shooting using high dynamic range and also shooting more cinematically. And mm-hmm. what happens is now there's a lot of gradation between light and shadow and all of that, which is great if you've got a properly calibrated TV. But if your TV is off, like so many of our TVs are, it looks terrible. And I think that's maybe what happened to Adam here, because Adam's right. He says they spend so much time and money on the set and the costume details, and then we never see anything. So check your TV calibration. And on a particularly dark show, it's a little bit like when I play a video game and it's too dark and I can't see what I'm doing. It's like crank up the brightness mm-hmm. until you can see what's going on, because it's not, there's no law against that. Just make your TV, you can make it look perfect, you can make it look good to you, and that's fine too. Just for Pete's sake, turn off motion smoothing, because you don't want it to look like a soap opera. It's very bad.
Yeah, I don't want that. Don't do that. That is great advice, by the way. Two things I want to say about that. Of course you would know that, and I'm really happy. The other one is, wow, I think what you're getting at too is really interesting. It's like, if you find something like that show, or if in my case, when it got was too dark, you can change the brightness and the contrast and all that per show. And some people don't want to do that. They just want to leave their TV alone.
Sure.
But how did you find rtings.com? So, R-T-I-N-G-S.
I found it through another podcast, which is the Accidental Tech Podcast. My friend John Syracusa, on there, they were having a conversation about TV calibration and apps mm-hmm. for calibration and all of that. And he recommended this site, and it's pretty amazing. Like, if you've got a TV model that is one of the ones they've looked at and they've got the settings there, like, you can't do, they won't do the like RGB calibration stuff, because that's too far down. But they have like, we tried to get the brightness and contrast, and here are the things to turn off, and this will be like a good base setting. And I did it, and it worked really well. So thanks to John Syracusa and the Accidental Tech Podcast for turning me on to it.
Wow. Okay. That's great advice.
That's good stuff. Well, let's see. Maybe I got time for one more. What will it be? Let's see. Okay. Here it is. We're going to close it out with Goran, who is from Country Code 46. Any guesses?
Ireland.
Sweden.
Oh, totally in the wrong area.
No, it's on the way. It's on the Ireland. Go over Ireland and keep going. You get to Sweden. It's fine. He says, we all heard the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Considering this, I can only applaud Tim's decision not to finish watching Twin Peaks. You should have quit long before. Personally, I love the season of Twin Peaks. To me, it was like being a six-year-old kid unwrapping my presents on Christmas Eve. Everything was in the moment, total suspense. I never knew what the next package would contain. I'm almost old enough to have never been surprised by anything that happens in a TV show or movie. So when a show that is totally unpredictable, like Twin Peaks, turns up, I want to immerse myself in the experience. I'm transported to a strange, weird, scary, perplexing world. It's all great fun. So to go back to my Christmas analogy, maybe Tim will look at all my presents and reject them as garbage, and maybe he's right. I'm not a critic, but six-year-old me will always treasure the memory, and old me will always hope for the opportunity to feel like a six-year-old on Christmas again. Regards, Goran. What I like about this letter is, like, mm-hmm. first off, it's, you know, the definition of insanity is about right. If you're not having a good time, why are you doing it? And mm-hmm. the other thing, which is, if there is ever a TV show that you will never be able to predict what the hell is going to happen next, it's totally Twin Peaks. So he's got us there.
Yeah, he does. And I love his enthusiasm for the Christmas and the delight he has in that show. So I'm not gonna rain on
that. It's his presence, right? He can enjoy
his presence. Yeah, absolutely.
And they're not your presence, and that's fine. All right. Well, if you would like to send a letter, are you going to Columbo me now? Because I'm wrapping up the show.
Done. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you'd like to send a letter to us, you can send an email podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. You can tweet at us @TVTM. You can go to our Facebook group, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. Those are good ways to reach us. I'm Jay Snell on Twitter and Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. And that's it for this week.
Woohoo!
But we'll be back next week with more. We're still planning, packing for Vancouver. That's in a week and a half. So we got a little bit of time. But we'll,
Van City.
Yeah. Oh man, I am so ready for that. That's going to be really cool.
It'll be fun.
And we'll maybe we'll give some more information out next week about where to look for us in
Vancouver. Yeah, we probably need to do that. Yeah,
probably
figure
that one out.
Actually,
all right.
Yeah, it's easy.
But until then, Tim, have a good weekend.
You too.
Bye, everybody.